So for me, my preference is to legislate the big hits out of the game. For the most, it's a physical and aggressive game, regardless of the big hits. I'd like to legislate, you know, some of the unnecessary violence out of the game. So I've been really pleased with the improvements on player safety over the years.
All right, so here we are, episode number 119 of Future Proof. Welcome back. You know me, I'm Bill. Glad to be here. Glad to have you here, too. So first, let me get this out of the way right off the bat. This week's show is sponsored, as always, by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So we're going to talk about football this week. Taking a little detour into the wide, wide world of sports. I've been looking for an excuse to get sports into the show somehow. I work for the Maryland Association of CPAs and the Business Learning Institute, but you know, I'm a jock at heart. I mean, before I started this gig some 20 odd years ago now, I was a journalist, a sports journalist to be specific. I was one of the first wave of employees at a place called sportsline.com. which was one of the first batch of websites that were exclusively focused on sports and sports journalism. This was back in 1996, 97. It eventually morphed into CBSSportsLine.com. Today it's just CBSSports.com. And man, talk about a great gig. We got paid to sit around and watch football and baseball and hockey all day. And all night, a lot of the time, as it turned out. That was that's a big reason why I got out, actually. The 1998 Winter Olympics, remember them? Held in Nagano, Japan. My nightly schedule for those 2.5 weeks was 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. So that's when I started to sour a bit on sports journalism as a career, and that's why I'm working for CPAs now. So there you go. The point is, I'm a sports fan, and I've been looking for an excuse, as I said, to talk a little sports here on the podcast, and I finally figured out how. Make it a conversation, right, about sports business. So that's where we're going today. My guest is Jeff Gehring. He is the CFO of the Baltimore Ravens NFL team. And I can't really take credit for setting this one up. Here's how this conversation came about. My boss at the MACPA, Tom Hood, he holds a series of town hall meetings for members each fall and spring. They serve as updates of sorts on what's going on around the profession. And we've been inviting some special guests to the last few of these meetings. And my colleague, Rebecca Brown, she's also a big sports fan. A big football fan. She went to the Ohio State University. And by the way, Ohio State folks, you're a little over the top with the whole the thing. I know it's your name, but the rest of the country were not terribly impressed. Just thought you ought to know. And don't kill the messenger. But you know, I mean, you know, go Buckeyes, right? Anyway, Rebecca thought it would be cool to get Jeff to join us on one of these meetings. And he agreed. So here we are. And it's not a typical Future Proof conversations. Jeff and me talking as usual, but it was done via Zoom with a few hundred accounting and finance folks listening in. So you should have that context going in. This is audio from a Zoom call, so a little bit different setting than usual, but you get the idea. We still had a really great conversation about how life as a CFO for an NFL team differs from your typical job in finance and some of the ways in which they don't differ. Here's one of the ways in which they do differ, by the way. He's got two Super Bowl rings, and none of the rest of you do. So there's that. But anyway, we'll get to that conversation here in just a moment. First, here's what caught my eye this week. It's an article from Yahoo Sports titled, "The NFL has more than 16 billion reasons to carry on amid COVID-19, written by a guy named Jason Owens. So here's one of the things I've been thinking about as I watch, you know, the World Series and the NBA playoffs and football on Saturday and Sunday afternoons. There aren't any fans in the stands, or very few fans anyway. And the question that kept popping up into my mind was, how much money are these teams losing by not having fans in the stands, right? I mean, because if there's no fans, they didn't buy a ticket, obviously, but they're also not buying beer and hot dogs and jerseys and all the rest of that stuff. That's a big chunk of change that teams are missing out on. And this article kind of explains all that from the NFL's point of view. So here's what Jason Owens writes. He says, quote, "While teams are facing losses in the billions due to limits on fans and stadiums, there are billions more to be made by continuing to fill Sunday, Monday, and Thursday TV schedules with games. The NFL operates largely as a collection of private businesses, so a precise breakdown of the NFL's collective finances isn't publicly available. The Green Bay Packers are publicly owned and provide a glimpse into the league's finances thanks to their obligation to report. But these numbers, along with reports on the NFL's revenue streams, they kind of paint a rough picture of the stakes the NFL plays for. In 2020, the revenue at stake for the league was somewhere in the neighborhood of $16.5 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars, and that's a pre-pandemic estimate. League revenue is generated under two umbrellas, national revenue and team revenue. Each revenue stream faces its own COVID-19 challenges. Team revenue is generated by ticket sales, merchandise, concessions, local sponsorships, and other game-related revenue streams. This is the revenue most at risk to the coronavirus. Forbes, which annually ranks franchises in terms of total revenue, reported in May that teams collectively generated $5.5 billion in local revenue in 2018, and that number promised to go higher in 2020 before COVID-19, of course. All teams are not created equal, by the way, in terms of local revenue. The Dallas Cowboys, which annually tops Forbes' franchise value list, have the most at stake. Forbes reported that the Cowboys generated $621 million in local revenue in 2018, making up roughly two-thirds of its league-leading total revenue of $950 million. By comparison, the then Oakland Raiders generated a league-worst $77 million in local revenue in 2018. They since moved to Las Vegas and opened a new stadium this season, which was supposed to give them a significant bump in local revenue. However, the stands in Las Vegas will remain empty after team owner Mark Davis made the decision to keep fans out for the entire season. So, how will the Raiders make money this season? That's where national revenue comes into play. And that's what the NFL is fighting hardest to maintain through the pandemic. National revenue is generated by broadcasting rights and national merchandising and licensing deals. And unlike local revenue, every team gets an equal split of the pie. According to a Sportico analysis, that pie was worth a record $9.5 billion in 2019. That added up to $296 million for each of the NFL's 32 franchises on top of the local revenue that they generate. End quote. So there, kind of an interesting look at how the NFL teams make their money, and more to the point, why it's so important for them to continue to play through the pandemic. If that local revenue isn't there, they need that national revenue, right? So if you're asking, how can the NFL carry on with its season when coronavirus cases are on the rise again? The answer is, any way it can. Which brings me back to my guest this week, Baltimore Ravens CFO Jeff Gehring. We talked about, yes, the impact COVID-19 is having on teams, but also other things like how corporate finance has changed in recent years and how the role of the CFO has changed right along with it. And again, this was a live Zoom interview in front of an audience of hundreds of accounting and finance pros. We took a few questions from people on the call. We referenced some of Jeff's slides from time to time, which you obviously can't see here, but otherwise, just kind of settle in for a great conversation. Here is me and Jeff Gehring.
All right. Thanks, Rebecca. And Jeff, thanks again for being here. This is a big thrill for us. Let's start off with a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit about your career journey. How did you end up as a CPA with, I guess, two now Super Bowl rings? Is that right?
Well, first of all, thanks very much for having me. Definitely appreciate being here. And if I go back to the charts that you had or the surveys there a minute ago, I'd say we are significantly impacted. I'd say we're trying to keep up and we've adapted well. So we're kind of all those items that were mentioned there. But so for me and my spot, how I got to become the CFO of the Baltimore Ravens, I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Oklahoma and Kansas. I spent a good portion of my time on a farm in Kansas. So how does a person from a farm in Kansas come out to the East Coast and become an executive with a sports franchise? I've always been a big sports fan. So if you've ever heard our owner, Steve Bisciotti, talk about as a child, he used to collect these little Coke bottle tops and they had some sports information on them. And he was kind of a sports fan from the very beginning. I was the same way. I collected the cards, the baseball cards, the football cards. I watched everything on TV. I'd go out and play outside. So I've always been a big sports fan. I eventually played basketball in college. Two different schools, Bethel College in Kansas. These are small schools, you know, the players who play for the love of the game, as they say, and then Rockhurst University in Kansas City. So I was in Kansas City. I graduated from Rockhurst. I got a position with Ernst & Young in their audit department and worked there for 4 years. Loved it. Worked with great people, enjoyed my time, had excellent clients. And at one point when I was with Ernst & Young, I was reading an Ernst & Young newsletter and said, Ernst & Young does the audit of the NFL salary cap. I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. You know, here I have this sports interest, kind of have this background in the audit practice of Ernst & Young. So I reached out to that department at Ernst & Young. They're out of, I think, New Jersey. And I called them and said, hey, do you need any assistance with your audit of the salary cap? And I think they just kind of put the phone away and laughed. They probably get that call like once a week and like, no, dude, we don't need any help. We got it covered. But it got the wheels turning in my mind. Like, you know what? Okay, I do have this sports. So how do I combine this sports interest and my professional experience? So I came up with the idea of going back to school. And I went to the University of Massachusetts, for a graduate degree in sports management. So kind of like Rebecca was saying, you know, there are programs kind of around the country. They've proliferated over the years where you can get degrees, undergrad or graduate degrees in sports management. So I felt like that was my best way to kind of work my way into the sports world. So I got a degree from sports from UMass. I did some great projects there. One in particular was I worked on the salary arbitration cases for the Boston Red Sox. So on behalf of the team, not the player, but it's got some excellent experience. Eventually, I graduated from UMass, and I was really looking for a job within a sports franchise. I ended up as back in the world of public accounting. There's these little niche sports consulting practices. Actually, you know, this is back far enough. It was Coopers and Lybrand at the time. So a lot of you guys might remember Coopers or maybe Coopers employees. So Coopers and Lybrand in Dallas had a sports and entertainment consulting practice, and I did financial feasibility studies. So typically meeting with either teams or jurisdictions that wanted to build stadiums or arenas. So you figure out how much does it cost? How much are you going to price the suites? How much are you going to price your general seating? What's the economic impact? All these questions are kind of compiled into a financial feasibility study. So that was kind of the bread and butter product. We also did valuations of teams, but we were actually brought in by the Ravens as consultants. So I was a consultant to the Ravens for like 6 months or so. It was when the Ravens were undergoing some financial distress. It's well documented, so this really isn't new information. And we were some of the consultants that came in. Eventually, the controller in the finance department at the Ravens left. Eventually, he's kind of bounced around a little bit. Now he's the VP of finance of the New York Giants. Great guy. But it opened up a position at the Ravens. And as the Ravens were kind of looking for people who might fill that spot, I think they looked at this consultant guy who'd been coming to complete this consulting study and said, hey, he might be a fit. So they interviewed me. I actually ended up with the job. That was 21 years ago. And I've kind of worked my way up the ladder since then. When Art Modell transitioned out as the owner and Steve Bisciotti transitioned in, the previous CFO left kind of to help Art Modell manage the money that he had, you know, accumulated partially from the transaction. And so it opened up the spot for me to move into the CFO role. So I've enjoyed that spot ever since. I do have some suggestions down here, Bill. If you don't mind, I'm just going to shoot down there to the bottom of the slide because I do get this question a lot. And I just want to make sure that anybody who might have an interest in the world of sports has just a few ideas on how to get into the world of sports. It might be someone you know, a neighbor. It might be a child. A lot of times I'll get calls, hey, my child or my son or daughter is interested in sports. So here are a few suggestions I'm just going to throw out for everybody's information. First suggestion I'd say, go to the website, review the team's staff directory. Most teams will have their staff directory on the website. It gives you a full list of basically all the positions within the team. And my suggestion is to take a look at that list and find out kind of where your interest and skill set might match a position. Because I will get calls from, you know, interested candidates and they'll say, look, I want to work for the Baltimore Ravens. And I'll say, okay, you know, kind of in what capacity? And they're like, well, anything. I just want to, you know, I'll take anything, which is okay. I completely get it. But I think what's more compelling is if I get a call and someone says, you know, I've researched your organization. I've gone through your front office directory. There are a few positions in there that I feel like my skill set would be a great match. And this is why. And it's just much more compelling, I think, you know, argument for someone who's a candidate. Another thing I'd mention is there is a publication called the Sports Business Journal, weekly publication. It's good because it gives the background kind of on the sports business side. So if you can, you know, call or if you're in an interview format and you can say, look, I understand that, say, for example, I understand, Jeff, you're in a pandemic. I realize that you probably have lost a lot of your sponsorships because you're not allowing fans and your regular sponsor activations at the game. So I saw in the Sports Business Journal that all the teams are tarping off the first seven rows of the stadium and using that for advertising for your sponsors because those are the rows that would sometimes be picked up on TV. Like, oh, okay, well, that's, to me, that's, you know, it's a interesting tidbit that someone has researched and figured out. So those types of articles are in the Sports Business Journal. It's not that expensive, I don't think. I think they may even offer a student rate. So it's a great way to get good information on the world of sports business. They have an accompanying daily, Sports Business Daily, that I subscribe to. I probably have read it almost every day for the last 25 years or so. It's expensive though, so you don't really need the daily. The journal is the weekly one. That one's not a bad one to have. And then there are a couple of sites I'll just mention here. Sports can be professional sports. It can be college sports. It can be working at conferences, like you know, a college conference, leagues. You can work with the food and beverage service that supports teams. So there's a couple of sites I just mentioned here in the slide, NCAA.org. There's an employment link. You have to look closely. It's like way down at the bottom of their site. But if you kind of sleuth around, you'll find it. And it's a database that shows all the open positions at NCAA athletic departments. Breaks them down by category. So again, if you have an interest in getting into the world of college sports, that's a good way just to check out the options. Teamwork Online is one that has also professional job opportunities, listings, I mean. And one nice thing is I think you click on some of these, you can see the qualifications that are required in order to attain one of these positions. So you can kind of chart your course if you want or start developing some skills and some background that might be make you a good match for one of these positions. And then the last thing I just would mention, kind of some of the fields that are really exploding right now, sports analytics. I think most people probably know that business analytics across the board, kind of every company I think is probably exploding right now. And sports betting, of course, being on the ballot here shortly is going to be another potentially field that's expanding. So I just want to make sure I mentioned those for people who may have an interest in either themselves getting into sports or knowing someone else who might have an interest in sports.
Yeah, that's great. And it's I think that's like a perfect example of something I know Rebecca tells us to students and young professionals all the time, how this profession, it's one of the few where I think you can turn an interest in almost anything into a career, right? I mean, anything that you might have an interest in, there's probably a finance function attached to it. And I think that that's one of the really cool and unique things about our profession. So, yeah, I guess next slide, Rebecca. My next question here, Jeff, is just curious if there's anything about being the CFO of an NFL team that's different from, you know, say more typical roles in finance.
No, I would say not as much as you might think. My tasks, I think, are very similar to most other CFOs of businesses. I put a few here on the slide. These are all look very familiar to everybody. We have a budget cycle, like everybody else. Our revenue and expense streams are pretty predictable. So we can have a budget. We'll have our budget cycle that starts in February, runs in March. Our fiscal year begins on April 1st. We meet with each department, meaning the CFO, the president. We're all meeting with the department, and the department presents all the initiatives for that year. So we'll compile all those initiatives and then eventually make determinations on which ones, you know, we'll pursue. So budgeting, similar to most folks, financial reporting. We do have a set of standardized reporting documents that are required from the NFL. We have our audits and we have tax returns. Those are some of the items that I think are just going to be similar to everybody else. Most folks on the call are probably recognizing these as very similar to what they may do. I have a couple of items kind of off the side here. Strategic planning. We do get everybody on our business operations group into a meeting at the beginning of the year, kind of at the very beginning of the budget cycle for strategic planning. And it's interesting, some of it's modeled a little bit after what our football operations group does. So after the season ends on the football operations side, all the personnel on the football operations side, kind of the main decision makers, that is, would get in a room. GM, head coach, coordinators, position coaches, medical, weight, strength, and conditioning. Everybody gets in a room and they'll go through player by player and kind of evaluate the player's performance for this past year and also kind of to assess the player's expected performance for the coming year. So we kind of do that similarly on the business operations side, invite all of our department directors into a meeting, and we'll strategize for the upcoming year. You know, I'm a Wall Street Journal reader, and they a while back had a part of their publication was the future of everything. So I was contemplating whether or not this next strategic planning, which is, of course, going to be very pandemic focused, but mm-hmm. when we come up to our budget cycle in February and March, maybe we take the tack of it. Let's make it the future of everything. And every department needs to kind of share what's the future in stadium security. What's the future in finance? What's the future in marketing and sales? Few other things I just mentioned here, the items in red, bottom right and the bottom left, cash forecasting, tax forecasting. I personally think those are some of my more difficult tasks. It's not that they're super difficult. It's just that it does take time. And we're kind of working on ways to automate those maybe a little better than we have in the past. And I guess the last thing I'd mention too is I do really enjoy having IT, HR, and risk management responsibilities. The risk management's kind of moving over to our legal group, which has grown in the past 5 years or so. I think they'll be taking on the majority of those tasks where I used to have the majority of those. IT and HR. We have great teams in those areas. And I've just enjoyed those departments, you know, those responsibilities also, because it provides a little more scope and breadth compared to the finance responsibilities solely.
Yeah, I'm sure the pandemic has put a spotlight on that whole notion of risk management now and where we go from here. Changes in the NFL over the years. Jeff, tell me a little bit about how the league has changed.
So there's a lot of different ways, a lot of different angles I think I could take on this one. I just mentioned a few here. I feel like 21 years ago when I first started, teams across the league tended to be, and mom and pop might not be the right word, but their business practice just weren't as advanced as they are now, which makes sense. I guess everybody, if they look at their companies, you look back 21 years and they probably would say the same thing. I think, you know, just most teams have become a little more corporate styled as the years have gone by. The popularity of the league, still unbelievable. You know, it was popular 21 years ago. I put a little note in here, 22 of the top 24 viewed programs in 2020 are NFL games. The two that weren't were the presidential debate and the vice presidential debate. And the statistics last year are almost identical. You know, take out the debates, but the statistics in terms of the NFL dominating the TV viewing habits are similar if you go back the last several years. The focus on player safety, I don't know, to me, that's a big deal. I feel like I was mentioning this to somebody else. I feel like sometimes you watch games on TV and the players seem a bit like avatars out there. You know, they're these kind of warriors in a way. You watch them, they're all geared up with their helmets and pads and everything. And sometimes you kind of lose sight that these are real people. And kind of when you're working at the team, you see them in the lunchroom. You deal with them on various issues. I think it humanizes them a little bit, and it pushes me to kind of really support changes for player safety, to be happy about, you know, changes that have made, to legislate a lot of the hits, get out of the game. I get it. Everybody loves the big hits. I mean, I do understand that. But on the other hand, I'd rather have my star players playing and not injured. So for me, my preference is to legislate the big hits out of the game. For the most, it's a physical and aggressive game, regardless of the big hits. I'd like to legislate, you know, some of the unnecessary violence out of the game. So I've been really pleased with the improvements on player safety over the years. On the Ravens side, if we just kind of look specifically on the Ravens side, our number of employees has increased over time. I listed here digital media and analytics. Analytics I mentioned earlier. Analytics means both on the football side and on the business side. Software and automation, every department. So our equipment department has software. Our medical department uses software. Finance, of course, does. It's everywhere. Probably the same as all of your companies as well. And then some major renovation projects. Most people, I think, are familiar with those. $120 million was the most recent one.
Yeah, in that light, the Ravens and the NFL aren't much different than anybody else. That we're dealing with the same types of evolutions and changes and technological advances as the rest of the world is, which is pretty interesting.
We have a question from the audience, and maybe you're going to cover this, I imagine, Jeff, as we move on. But one of the questions was, how has COVID impacted your revenue? And then one of the other members said, how come you're not wearing purple?
If you look closely enough, you might have to zoom in on my shirt. I do have purple. It's purple and gray. I specifically picked it, you know, just to have the representing the purple. I think we'll get to the flower. COVID one. I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think we'll get to the COVID one in just a slide or two here.
Yep. Yep. So we talked about changes in the league, changes in corporate finance over the years that you've witnessed. What have been some of the big things that you've noticed lately?
So I do go back to the automation, and I listed our vendors here, the systems that we use, just because I thought people might be interested in these. Some of you may use the same ones. We do use NetSuite as our core financial product. And then you can see some of the other systems. We have an automated payable system. Love it. If you don't have an automated payable system, I highly recommend it. It's a great way to circulate your invoices without having them, you know, be in paper format, especially in a pandemic situation. It was perfect. So we do have that. We use Concur for expense reimbursement. Just the one thing I'd mention, I guess, on this slide is it's kind of the box in the right there, the one-stop shop versus best in class. And maybe folks on the call have kind of run into this situation before. Maybe you're a consultant and you consult on these topics. But for us, about 3 years ago, this was a big deal for us. We were using Microsoft Great Plains at the time. It was on-premise. So we wanted to switch to cloud-based. And the kind of the thought was maybe a one-stop shop would be ideal, it would be great. We could have our core financials on there. We could have our payroll platform on the same system, and we'd have our HR and onboarding also on there. We could do our expense reporting, our payables processing, our invoices, our fixed assets, everything, all under one system. So we went out looking for it. And there are some that had some, you know, some nice capabilities in that respect. Workday was one that was high on our list. And honestly, where we ended up was a concern that if we went with the one-stop shop platform, it would be great in some ways, but you lose a little bit on the specialized functionality on some of the individual functions. So the one-stop shop may not have the best, most robust expense reimbursement or payables processing or core financials or maybe reporting. And so we eventually went away from the one-stop shop and instead went with a kind of a multi-platform option, which has worked well for us. You have integration issues, so you have to constantly kind of manage the integration between these systems. But we've been able to manage it, and it's done well. So I guess it's just, you know, there are pros and cons for either one of them. I was just going to mention it in this presentation because it might apply to other folks who are on the call.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, yeah, I mean, we can't ignore it forever. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is COVID. From a front office standpoint, how have the Ravens kind of pivoted during the pandemic? What kind of things have you guys done?
Yeah, so of course, COVID has a major impact. Someone asked how much we lost. We lost virtually all of our local revenues. So it's over, if you total it all up, it's going to be over $100 million. Luckily for us, when COVID began, we were in the off season. So we're able to kind of wait a little bit and see how baseball and basketball and hockey adapted. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, those leagues, well, basketball and hockey went to a bubble format. So I get a lot of questions like, well, why didn't the NFL go with a bubble format? Well, basketball and hockey were just finishing off the end of their season. So it was a shortened version of a shortened time period, which is a key difference. We would be dealing with a bubble format for the entirety of our seasons, which would be much more difficult. Another difference on NBA and NHL, just the number of personnel that had to be in the bubble. I want to say NBA allowed 47 people, players, coaches, support staff in the bubble. Ours, with 53 active players, 16 on the practice squad, there's 69 already. You have additional coaches and staff on top of that. So the numbers of individuals that have to be in the bubble would be much greater. So that's one reason why we haven't gone with a bubble format to this point. But we were able to learn a little bit from the NBA and NHL, which I thought was helpful. We had remote capability in place, so our employees who were work from home could log in pretty easily. We did adopt the Microsoft Teams and Zoom like pretty much everybody else. One thing I'd mention here, our president did conduct town halls. So if your business has work from home employees, we were worried our employees felt disconnected. They weren't there at the training facility or the stadium where some of them work on a daily basis. You feel kind of disconnected. You lose that contact with the football team. So we made sure that our president did town halls to try to keep our employees engaged and informed of what was going on. Some mental health positive messaging, we did that too. Surveys. So we sent out a survey recently to our employees. How connected do you feel right now? What would make you feel more connected? So I just wanted to mention that too in case it helped with any of the other folks on the call.
A quick follow-up question in there. As you have been working with your work from home employees, what have been some of the biggest, I don't know if the word is challenges, but what have you been hearing from them about how that setup has been working? Are they liking it? Do you think it's going to be something that you stick with over time?
I think we will. We're prepared to allow work from home on a continued basis in some form. Just depends on the particular position. I think it varies. Some employees have felt very disconnected and disengaged. Other employees have appreciated the flexibility. I have a buddy of mine who's the CFO of an NBA team. And I've known him for a long time. And I called him up kind of midway through the pandemic. And I was kind of lamenting with him on the phone a little bit, like, I'm guessing you're kind of stuck at home, you know, like kind of like I am, disengaged with everything. And he's like, yeah, I love it. I was like, oh, yeah. And he said, you know, I have young kids at home. I have more flexibility. We've been able to travel. I can work from home even when we're traveling. Not a lot. You know, this was pandemic time, still the heart of it, so you couldn't do much traveling. But so it kind of opened my eyes a little bit. Like, you know, there's some positives to working from home. And I think some of our employees have kind of focused on those positives.
Yeah, that's great. So finance challenges that the pandemic has posed, what are some of those things that you guys have been dealing with?
Scenario planning, you know, one after another. Probably everybody on the call would say the same thing. Initially, at the beginning of the year, we were in the middle of our regular budget cycle. All games, all fans. Once the pandemic started, we sent our employees home. We thought they'd be home for maybe a couple of weeks. But then we started realizing, like, wait a minute, this could be a larger scale issue. We converted to no games, no fans. So screech to a halt is probably the best way that I would describe it. No spending. If you wanted to spend something like $2,500 or more, you needed to have approval. So we really screeched everything to a halt. Down at the bottom, you can see the slide that we had a line of credit in place. We drew on the line of credit. So we had funds available because we had some concerns as to whether or not we'd be able to draw moving forward. So we, you know, eventually kind of when things settled, we repaid the line of credit. But there was obviously definitely major concerns about the financial operations. We did flip to a version of the budget, all games, no fans, kind of where we currently are right now. And then many people have seen, you know, the governor's orders regarding capacity at the stadium. So we're currently working with the state and the city on a partial fan scenario. So we're hopeful for the next game on November 1st against the Steelers to have fans in attendance at that game.
So I'm curious, Jeff, what do you think the future of the NFL looks like related to, I mean, has COVID changed how the NFL is going to look going forward?
Yeah, you know, COVID has had, of course, a major impact. Everybody knows the no fan scenario. Initially, we thought we'd be back to kind of pre-COVID levels, hopefully by next season. Now we're wondering if that will be the case, or it might be the season following. So we're hopeful that 2021 can be back to a much more of a normal season. The TV contract renewals. So kind of the game plan was to renew the collective bargaining agreement with the players and then transition to renewing the TV contracts that were coming up for renewal also. And it was all shaping up kind of just right. Well, then COVID hit and we hadn't renewed the TV contract. So we had renewed the CBA, which was important to have labor peace, but we hadn't renewed the TV contract. So those are still coming up. I think those should still be good. The ratings have still been strong. I think the renewal should be good still. One thing, if you do happen to come on November 1st to our game against Pittsburgh, we've converted food and beverage to cashless for kind of COVID purposes. So payments will be required by credit card. And then contactless too. Some teams have gone to ordering with your app. And then once the order is ready, you get a message to go pick it up and they scan like a QR code or something that shows that you're the person to pick it up. You know, a couple of things I would mention that kind of issued the map on the top left is interesting. I don't know if folks can see it all that well, but if this is a compilation of fan interest by team. So you can kind of recognize some of the colors here. This is geographical, you know, in terms of it's not by population necessarily. It's just kind of purely geographical. Like the big orange there in the middle is the Broncos, the Cowboys, you can see. If you would look at our market, it's tiny. Pittsburgh to the north, we got Washington, got Philadelphia close by. So our market is small, zero Fortune 500 companies in Baltimore. So it's a challenge for us. And kind of regardless of whether or not COVID is impacting us, that challenge is still in existence. So we would love to see more businesses, of course, move into the Baltimore area. Viewing at home, you know, the decision whether or not to come to the game or stay home to watch, it's also something that we're kind of constantly monitoring. I think, in my opinion, there's nothing like being at the game. There's nothing. It's going to be the best. But I do understand there's kind of challenges too, and there's pros and cons for people who are making the determination to come to the games.
So we do have one question I think that came in from folks who are listening in. They wanted to know if there are any departures from GAAP in NFL accounting.
Not really. I mean, we have GAAP financial statements just like everybody else. We have a report that's due to the NFL called a conforming statement. So they basically take your financial data and put it in a standardized template that all 32 teams will populate to simplify the process of compiling all the data together, like for salary cap purposes and, you know, future financial decisions at the league level. So we have modified our GAAP financial statements, the presentation, the line item descriptions, to kind of fall a little more in line with our conforming statements, to eliminate some of the reconciliation back and forth. But actually, for the most part, our GAAP financial statements would look very similar to any company's GAAP audit report.
Hey, Bill, one other quick question came in. Is Jeff related to another fabulous CPA in Kansas, Amber Gehring? You don't have a...
Not that I know of.
Younger sister in Kansas.
Maybe I need to do some genealogy research, though.
So, yeah, I've got just a couple more quick questions here, Jeff. There's been a lot of talk recently about the role of the CFO, changing role. They're becoming more strategic, more of like a co-pilot to the CEO. What's been your experience with the Ravens? Have you noticed any of that kind of change?
Yeah, definitely. I think maybe Tom mentioned earlier, the CFO has touch points with all the departments. So you kind of have this broad perspective that not all of the VPs or the senior VPs in the organization may have. So to me, that puts the CFO in a kind of ideal spot to be a great co-pilot to a CEO. Our CEO, Dick Cass, president, some people may know him. Great guy, very good with the finances. So there's little less reliance probably on me as the CFO, since he already has an excellent understanding of the finances. I do feel like sometimes that I'm a compiler of information. We have VPs who are excellent in all of our different departments, and they're coming up with their own plans and their own initiatives, and they'll submit them. And sometimes I'm just a compiler of all of their ideas and, you know, putting them into a budget or a reporting format so we can all look and review. And I had in red here, I had helps prioritize. To me, that's one of the most difficult things that I have to do. We have overachievers kind of throughout the organization. Our department directors and our VPs are overachievers. So you go to a budget cycle meeting with them, they'll have idea 1, 2, and 3 to make their department better. And then you go to the next meeting and the next person has the same ideas or same, you know, list of ideas. So eventually you have to take all these ideas and prioritize them, which is difficult because some of the ones that you're declining to pursue are actually very good ideas, but we just don't have either the financial resources or maybe it's the human resources to pursue those particular initiatives. The last bullet I just mentioned too, I think over the years, credibility is everything. You know, people say cash is king. I agree with that. Relationships to me are probably even more of a king than cash. And to maintain the credibility, the CFO, in my opinion, to be an effective kind of co-pilot, effective advisor, you got to have your credibility. I stay a step or two away from the line, I guess I would say. We have some department directors kind of push the envelope, may step over the line. I stay back. I just want to make sure my credibility is always pretty much impeccable at all times.
My last question, Jeff, what does the future of finance look like to you? I mean, this profession, as you look at it, 5, 10, 20 years down the road, what do you see?
Yeah, so good question. There's a lot of ways I could go with this one too. I just sprinkled in a few ideas kind of for the NFL in general, in addition to finance. In-stadium betting will be popular, you know, if it passes, that you can bet on whether or not you're going to get a first down, whether or not there'll be a sack. Of course, the final outcome of the game, the number of touchdowns, 100-yard rushing, you know, all kinds of player statistics. So I think the in-stadium betting will be an interesting trend that's coming. Personalized viewing, I just wanted to mention this, people might find this interesting. If you're familiar with Red Zone, like Red Zone is the broadcast channel where you can watch, it has all the games. And they'll go from game to game when a team gets inside the 20-yard line, which is the red zone. So they'll switch from game. If two games are in the red zone, they'll show both of the games on your TV screen. If three, they'll go with three on your screen. If you have four teams, like in the red, they'll put four. The quad box is what they call it. So this personalized viewing goes to another level where you can watch. You could probably eventually program into your phone that your favorite team, your favorite players, and as your team gets into maybe a scoring position, or if your favorite players, maybe they're your fantasy players, a lot of fantasy football people out there, your player is, you know, has had a carry or a pass or a reception, your feed would switch to that. So it could be a kind of a continual a viewing of your favorite teams and players. Second screen technology, a lot of people already use a second screen. There's different platforms out there, Twitter. We have our official second screen technology is our own Baltimore Ravens app. So I feel like more and more people, especially young folks, are not only watching something, but also following on their phone at the same time. And it's just like double content, double information coming into them. Finance, more diversity. Hopefully most finance departments are looking to improve their diversity. Continuation of work from home employees that we mentioned earlier, I would say yes to that too. Automation, data visualization. And one thing I didn't put on here though was probably improved or kind of continued analytics. Kind of goes along with data visualization. Power BI, some of the folks on the call may already use it. I don't have that quite that functionality. We're looking at some systems to get some of that functionality for us where you can identify a set of data, push a button, and these conclusions, these little paragraph conclusions on your data, maybe it's sales data by calendar quarter or something. You have these conclusions that are generated for you, which I thought was pretty cool. I just saw one of those demonstrations recently. So I don't know, those are some of the things that I would mention that may be coming in the world of finance.
It's going to be fun to watch. Jeff, thanks for being here once again. Really appreciate your insights. Tom, I'm going to kick back to you. Anything you want to wrap up with Jeff?
No, Jeff, that was awesome. I mean, you covered just about everything. I think, what was there? There was one other final question. Maybe this one might go to Dennis, but how do you determine who can attend the games? I guess as you open up attendance, how does that go?
Dennis, you want to take that one?
I'm happy to answer it. So great question. And if you guys didn't hear, we just got word officially from the mayor that we are going to be able to host fans this weekend. We actually have 22,000 PSL owner accounts and now only 3,800 tickets available. So we're going to do a lottery system based on a lot of different variables to determine who's going to come. But there's going to be a lot of, unfortunately, unhappy people, but we're just excited to have our doors open. That's for sure.
Yeah. So again, yeah, Jeff, you hit on like all the things that we see about the, you know, modern CFO and what's going on there. So we really appreciate your insights and taking time to be with us today. And now let's move to that next slide, Becca, because
One more thing, Dennis Carr, I just saw is we did get a comment, woohoo, UMass. So you have a fellow UMass watching as well, Jeff.
That's great.
Kindred CPA spirit out there.
Yes.
So with that, I want to introduce Dennis Fryer back into the conversation in the sales organization of the Ravens with a special offer for our MACPA members.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's definitely a tough act to follow. Jeff, great job. And, you know, I like to address another elf in the room. I, too, am not wearing purple, so I do apologize. And we definitely appreciate the opportunity to partner with you guys and honor to be granted the floor for just a minute. And you guys have probably seen some information on your member website with a special offer from us for season tickets. And you should be receiving an email after today's webinar with a little bit more information. So if you're not taking notes right now, that's okay. And if you already, and as we already alluded to, we're really excited to be hosting fans for the game next weekend. And for us, you know, we all often get the question, why would I buy season tickets right now? You're only having limited capacity. What's going to happen with the season? In our viewpoint, now is probably the best time ever to join the flock, as we say. We have an amazing rewards program. We're able to offer flexible payment plans, which is something we always haven't been able to do. We have the ability to get tickets for games this year, which Tom already queued up for me. We built out this special offer for appreciation for this group. But one thing to note that I didn't mention is we have a really amazing, amazing team and a super bright future. And we're so excited. And Jeff also said it so eloquently, there's nothing like being at the game. So I realize that no one signed up for a sales pitch today. So I'll let you guys get back to business here in a second. But one last thing, you know, we're going to have a Zoom call next week with Todd Heap on Tuesday. If you don't have Zoom fatigue, you are more than welcome to join. When Rebecca sends out the email with the offer, feel free just to shoot an email to the tickets email address. I'm on the other side of that. Would love to have you guys there. If you have questions about anything, please let us know. But we would love the opportunity to have you guys in attendance all the time. So if there's any questions to ask or anything like that, I'm happy to take them. But if not, I'll let you guys get back to business. Go Ravens.
Good stuff there from Jeff Gehring. He is the CFO of the Baltimore Ravens. Check out BaltimoreRavens.com when you get a chance. And hey, listen up, for any of you Ravens fans out there, the Ravens are offering members of the Maryland Association of CPAs a special deal on permanent seat licenses for the 2021 season. Big discounts here on all of the Ravens home games. We're talking PSL prices reduced by up to 80%. Wow. The offer is available until December 1st, 2020. And you will find details at macpa.org/macpa-member-special-offers. Let me repeat that for you one more time. That's macpa.org/macpa-member-special-offers. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs we'll need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge, rather, along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Enunciation, not among them. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.